Welcome to episode 339 of Coffee Pods and Wads, or 339 if you're listening in America. This show is sponsored by Self-Made Training Program. I just did a workout from Self-Made Training Program, a little every 2 minutes on the minute piece. You can go to selfmadetrainingprogram.com before they change the name and get a free trial on there to see why I like it so much. You can go to lskd.co and you can use the code CPWLSKD. You get a discount of, I think, 15%, and I get 10% of whatever you spend. So if you spend $100, I get $10. So it supports the show. Helps me improve things, makes things out a little bit better. You can also go to join.whoop.com/CPW. And if you order a strap through that link, you get a free strap, like a free device, and a free month, and I get $50. So again, supports the show. I wear LSKD all the time. I wear my Whoop and use my Whoop all the time. I train Self-Made Training Program most of the time. Some days I just can't bring myself to do more than 5 minutes on the bike or 10 minutes on the bike, or just sprints. Also, you can go to BillFratley's.com and use the code CPW15. I use my Bill Fratley's bag every single day for work, and if I'm traveling somewhere, I use it as well. They've got backpacks, kind of rucksack things, and they've got luggage cases as well. You can go to d8fitness.com. I don't have a code for that, but if you're on the island of Ireland and you want any kind of fitness accessories, so clocks, bars, plates, like machines, supplements, straps, wraps, any of that kind of stuff, or if you own a gym and want to get your machine serviced or your equipment serviced, d8fitness.com is the place to go for that as well. And last couple of ones, if you go to get.fitter.training, you can see why Taylor Self and Matt Fraser and heaps of others use Fitter to back up their programming online. See why it's so good. And if you go to froggrips.com, you can get some straps, wraps, grips, tape, just any kind of hand paraphernalia you could use for your CrossFit journey. Oh, that sounds disgusting. I hate saying that. Tonight, around the whiteboard semi-final, Andrew Hiller, Chase Ingram, Lucy Campbell will face off for a place in the final in February. Tomorrow night, Don Fall is on the show. On tonight's show, if you go to the live chat, 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, you can win a free, obviously it's free if you're winning it, you can win a Whoop accessory pack, some straps and stuff like that. If you go to the live chat tomorrow at 9 p.m. GMT with Don Fall, you can win a Frog Grips pack, so like some knee sleeve straps, like wraps, thumb tape, all that kind of stuff. And if you go to the live chat on Friday at 8 p.m, we're doing a review of 2023. Chase will be back on for that with Bill Grunder and Brian Spinn. And you can win one of the ESC Sounds speakers, which is like a ridiculously good piece of kit. Anyway, today, Dan Ty was on the show. He was on last night on live on YouTube. We chat about competing in rugby, training, moving into CrossFit, coaching online, in person, working with Evan McQuaid, working with Red Pill. Now he's working with Mayhem. And we also talk about that kind of pitfalls of team competition and why he's moving into individual after making it to the games last year, but a disappointing year the year before.
Never alive. Oh, no, I have. I've done a few, but not many.
Just say it's your first. That's fine.
My first time.
Just lie. Yeah. Just lie. You're allowed to lie on the internet. Just ask Roman's translator. You're a Mayhem athlete now.
I am, as of quite recently.
How exciting is that? Facundo was on before Dubai, and he was like, "Oh, I was so distracted for about 15 minutes during the conversation because he was like, "Oh, a UK athlete," and I was like, "Jesus, who the hell could that be?" And then I was going through, so I went onto his page and I clicked on his following, and I was like, "All right, why else would he be following Dan?" If it wasn't, like, I was like, okay, who's going to buy? And I searched Dan and you popped up and he was following Saf as well. And I was like, all right, okay, come on. Like, he didn't give in on air. He told me afterwards, right, but he didn't give in on air.
I played through him.
But that's amazing.
Thanks.
Is that like when that sort of thing happens, is that the kind of thing that, like, when you start a CrossFit, it's like, wouldn't it be cool if?
It's a pinch me moment for sure. I still can't believe it. I feel very, very fortunate. And small fish, big pond, just happy to be there, happy to just fit in and smile. And yeah, I'm hoping, you know, if I can look back on my little CrossFit career at some point and say that I got to be coached by with Mayhem, that's a huge accomplishment for me.
You used to play rugby?
Yeah, professional.
Who was that for, Leeds, or who was that for?
It was for Leeds, mainly always for Leeds. I played a bit of, mainly rugby union. I also played a bit of rugby league.
Is that Leeds Rhinos or no?
I did the Rhinos Academy. I never played the first team. I did some training sessions with the first team, but that was it. I was quite young.
And how did you get into rugby? Was that like always from a kid or?
I think as soon as I came out, I got thrown onto a rugby pitch and was given a gum shield and a scrum cap and told off you go. I started when I was 3, I think.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah, it's literally all I ever used to know.
And you put up a post recently. I'm currently looking for it. I can't find it.
Injury?
Yeah. When was that?
It was a reel. I think I'm wearing a black t-shirt.
Maybe it's in here. Yeah. Hang on, I have it. You put this up like 2 days ago or whatever. So injuries, were they like part and parcel of rugby?
Oh, yeah. They were, and it was always a case, this is how I kind of found it in rugby, was if you're injured, it was never a poor me situation. It was when are you back? You know, when's your rehab start? When's your operation? When's your return? Because private healthcare and the rugby side was brilliant. But I only realized when I sort of stopped playing rugby with the injuries, as soon as you're out of that sort of world, when you're left on your own, the injury side gets a lot more tricky.
Yeah. So you said, was it 2017 professional rugby player, 2019 a couple of bad injuries, and then 2020 career over, is that what it said?
I think it was maybe like another, I think it was 2018 I got those two injuries. I was in between two clubs. I'd had a bad season with one club and I was about to sign a contract for a new club. I needed a second shoulder operation, and the day before signing my new contract and the day before my shoulder operation, I snapped my Achilles tendon, and that sort of just threw a spanner in the works of everything. And then, yeah.
Explain how that works. So I would have thought that if you were about to sign a contract with a club and you were like, hey, I'm just getting surgery tomorrow, that if I was a club, I'd be like, fuck off. Like, come back to me when you have your rehab done.
So I had a 1 year offer with the club on the, like, almost like a trial year, because they knew that in the off season, I'd have the operation, I'd be ready and rehabbing during preseason to be fine for the season. So it wasn't like a multi-year offer. It was a one-year trial offer as it was. And then as soon as I did my Achilles, they said, well, you know, you can't even have a trial year now. So just come back when you're better, is what they said.
And did you?
I tried, and I played some rugby sevens, and I was like warm up and I broke my wrist. And that was when I realized, like, I love rugby and I will to the day I die, but my body doesn't seem to love it as much.
And is it bad luck, or is it like a compounding effect of playing from when you're 3 and just putting yourself through the, I know you weren't like doing contact when you're 3, but you know what I mean? Like that for playing for like 10 plus years and putting yourself into those situations.
I've really got no idea. I just think it's like a bit of a funnel, like a lucky dip style thing where, you know, those balls that just bounce all over.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're the lucky ball, and I definitely wasn't the lucky ball. And I also think I'm actually half Jamaican, like I'm mixed race. My dad's Jamaican. And I think that, I don't know, maybe something to do with my muscle fibers and like the way I was, maybe I was quite brittle boned and also quite fast twitch, and something didn't really work well with the contact, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's interesting. So your dad is Jamaican. Where's your mum from?
She's English and a little bit Irish.
Oh, where in Ireland? Do you know where in Ireland, though?
No, but I'll find out for you later.
Yeah, okay. call her there now. So your dad is from Jamaica. Where did you grow up then?
I was born in Hong Kong, but I only lived there.
This is fucking bizarre. Right, go on. Keep going. Okay. I thought you were going to say like Croydon or something.
My dad was born in Croydon, potentially.
Croydon has a huge like Irish and Jamaican population. Yeah, I lived in Croydon for like 18 months. This is a suburb or like a outpost of London for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about. But yeah, there's loads of Jamaicans and loads of Irish. I worked in an Irish bar and a Jamaican nightclub, and they were across the road from each other. And it's something like, there used to be loads of signs up around London, and it was like, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish was on all the, like, really? Pub, all the pub doors, like not like 2 years ago, like, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So you couldn't go in if you're black, you couldn't go in if you're Irish, and you couldn't bring a dog inside. But it was always funny because, well, I don't know how funny it was to them, but Irish was listed after dogs. So I was like, if you were looking at it on a scale of hierarchy, it was like, all right, like, worst case, we let in some dogs, but the Irish aren't coming in. You know, it's just like, that's where we draw the line. So he lived in Croydon for a while. And then how did you end up in Hong Kong? Was that where, did they have some kind of unusual work or something?
Yeah, my mum was a lawyer, and my dad was a personal trainer, actually. I think he was in the army. So he ended up in there in the army. That's how they met. So I was born there. I've got no sort of ties to Hong Kong apart from being born there. But then you might notice that my last name looks kind of Chinese. That's another story.
Go on.
There was Chinese people that emigrated to Jamaica. So the last name comes from Jamaica, basically, but it's Chinese. So I've got a little bit of Chinese somewhere.
Jeez, you're a real like melting pot of cultures or whatever. So, okay. That's mad. So Jamaica, Ireland, England, Hong Kong, like technically, and Chinese. It's random. It's a random mix. There's a job we have to do today, actually. So Allegra won a Bill for Athletes bag, and it came in the post yesterday. And today, geez, I hope there's someone from Ireland watching. So today you have to give out, I think it's €125 voucher for D8 Fitness, which are down here on the bottom left of the screen. But it has to be someone that is on the island of Ireland, or else the voucher is useless to you because they only deliver to the island of Ireland. So if you want to win that, I guess, how the fuck can we know? Put IRE before whatever comment you're putting in, and then at the end of the show, I'll get Dan to scroll back up and pick someone that's written IRE in their comment. That makes sense, doesn't it? There's one. Look, sure. We'll just, if no one else comes up, we'll give it to him. All right, so then how long did you live in Hong Kong for? Is that like just when you're a toddler kind of thing, when you're a baby?
Yeah, I left when I was 6, nearly 7. So I haven't been back since. I feel like I'm English.
Yeah, you sound like you're English, if that's any consolation. And where do you live now then? Rotherham?
I live in Barnsley, which is close to Rotherham. It's another little place in Yorkshire. Beautiful countryside. Yeah, it's quite nice here.
So when you got that injury, so you played rugby all the time, you're a professional rugby, what kind of a professional rugby player were you? Like, were you the type of, you like a lad's lad going out like drinking and womanizing, or were you like a quiet, like, retiring type?
I was a quiet retiring type from the start. I feel like, looking back, I really tried to fit in, but large groups isn't good for me anyway. I'm just not the best in large groups, so I really tried, and I did some nights out and this and that, but it was never my sort of scene. So I think I was the kid, or the adult rugby player who, like, if they told you to go home and get 8 hours sleep, I'd go home and get 8 hours sleep. If a nutritionist said to eat this before the match, I'd eat this before the match. I was really by the book because it's all I knew and it's all I wanted to do.
Yeah. So it's all you knew and all you wanted to do, and then one day you break your wrist and it's like, are you told, hey, you're finished, or do you just decide yourself, oh, fuck this, that's too many now?
Do you know, yeah, that's the good side, actually, is I guess I decided that I was done. I actually, funny story, I was in Sri Lanka this year after the games, and my friend said, we've got a touch rugby session, do you want to join in? And I was like, I haven't touched a ball since I stopped playing rugby. But yeah, of course I do. So went and I tore my hamstring. So
Jesus. If ever there was vindication for a decision.
Yeah, like, I don't need to be told I'm done. I just need to listen to myself or my body. It tells me itself.
Yeah, geez, that's all the confirmation you needed. It's interesting though, like, so you finish and decide, and like what do you do then? Because like, if that's part, if like, it's not only, it's not like, it's more than a hobby. It's like your profession, your job. It's also, I'm assuming, like a huge part of your identity. Like, I'm assuming if you ever went, home for Christmas or family occasions or anything, that an awful lot of the conversation would revolve around, like, hey, how's rugby going? Or hey, how's your recovery going? Or hey, how's, like, fucking, what's the league looking like? Or like, whatever. Like, that's just the way it works. So what was that first, like, say, 3-6 months after that, when you were like recovering from your injury, you knowing you weren't going back, and then having to feel those kind of questions of, well, what's the plan after this? And then you're like, that's, I'm assuming that's one of the worst parts, that you have to tell the same story, like, to everyone that asks, like, oh, I actually think I'm quit. Oh no, I just think it's the right thing to do. Oh, but you shouldn't. Oh, but, you know, over and over again.
Yeah, it was very weird. That was the bit I think I struggled with the most. Identity was huge. Like, I used to be so proud to wear my rugby top on my trains when I was, like, really young, maybe 14, 15 in the academy. Like, so proud to wear my Leeds top on the train to Leeds. I used to think that I was the coolest guy on the train. Now I look back and, like, I used to look at people with briefcases and suits and stuff and think, who are they? They're not playing for Leeds. Like, how? I just felt so, it was me. So getting out of it was strange. I luckily had a few friends that said I should get out of it, and they were playing rugby with me at the time. It's obviously, it's not all glitz and glam rugby. So there's, have you ever heard of like a team bin juice or like a bin juice?
Fuck.
No. So bin juice, or we were,
it sounds abhorrent, whatever it is. It doesn't sound like it's a positive. Yeah. Go on.
Team cabbage, we were called, or bin juice, is kind of where you're not getting much love from the coaches. You're not getting much game time. You're just a player who's turning up for training, holding the tackle bags, all this sort of stuff. You're not having a great time. So we name ourselves either Bin Juice or Team Cabbage, which is, they both kind of speak for themselves.
Yeah, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like some sort of fluid ingestion or something, the way you described it.
No. There's other stuff, but that's not for this podcast. and a few of them, as you have these sort of sit downs, you know, having lunch, they were just saying things like, you know, this is a load of, can I swear on the show or not?
Oh, fuck no. No way. Yeah, you can, yeah.
They just say it's like, it's a load of shit. And what are we doing here? What's the point?
So when you say that they were advising you, or they were encouraging you to step away, it was like they were encouraging you and themselves. Like, they were kind of normalizing it for the whole group. Like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And people at the time kind of knew that I wanted to go into fitness, and I'd got a personal training qualification. I was trying to get into that. And I, in fact, a friend of mine showed me Ollie Marchon's profile a while back, because he used to play rugby too, and said, Dan, you should just do something like this, because what we're doing is shit. Like, it's, there's, maybe we'll make it better, maybe we won't. At the moment we're Team Cabbage, so what's the point? You should do this. So when I did stop, I had some really nice supportive messages from people that said, do you know what, you're totally right, you know, go do something else, because there's more out there.
What about like coaches and stuff like that, or you know, like people in, like, outside of that group? Like, they're going to be very empathetic because they're in the same situation that you are, and they're probably like, man, if someone quits, I'll quit. I need Dan to quit. If Dan quits, I'll quit. But like, what about the others that are like, no, like, you can definitely make it? Or like coaches who, you know, because I know maybe it's different when it's a professional sport, but especially in Ireland here, you have you know, you have like semi-professional sports or amateur sports, like GAA and stuff. And there's so much community pressure. Like, if someone says, I know so many people who've retired, and then the next season they're like, fucking fine, I'll go back. You know, like, and it just keeps happening. And was there any of that kind of pressure from like family or anything?
Family were really supportive, because they saw that I was just getting hurt, and they support me no matter what. I'm very lucky. There was a bit of external pressure for sure. One of the worst ones, not the worst, but the toughest ones was, yeah, coaches of other clubs and friends of mine and everything like that saying, do you want to come back? Do you want to do this? Or why don't you just come back? Why don't you play here? Why don't you play there? Just do it for fun. Play for us. I think they were all really nice, but that was a bit tricky for me. And then, yeah, the reason I sort of started social media was to prove to myself that I could be something else apart from rugby. Initially, it was to get myself back to rugby and motivate myself, but then it turned into me trying to make a new personality for myself, basically, and just figure out who I am.
Yeah. Were you always ripped?
Pardon?
Were you always ripped?
Yeah, pretty much. I've got some, I wish I could show you. I've got some photos of when I was like 15, 16. And I feel like I look the same now as I did when I did. Like, it's pretty disappointing, really, because I train a lot, but
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of people would be pretty happy, to be honest, if, especially at 15, if they were just yeah, I'm a brick shit house. And I'm,
yeah, it was great at 15. But yeah, I've always looked the same. I weigh the same as when I played rugby. I've just got a little bit less fat on me now, but not much.
And is that like through being careful? Is it genetics? Is it like just consistent, you know, like almost muscle memory over time that your body, that's just your body's comfort state or whatever that it keeps returning to? Because like most people quit sport and they like pack on a few pounds or they get light or whatever, especially if you're leaving rugby, I guess. So I was kind of half expecting you to say, it took me a while to build back up the strength for CrossFit or something, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
No, I think I was really driven through my injuries to come back fit and healthy. So I stayed active the whole time. Yeah. In terms of the way I look, yeah. If you saw my dad, you'd see why I look the way I look. He's same height as me. He's just got a bit of a belly on him because he's 65 now, but we look identical. And I know exactly where I'm going. And I'm really excited because he looks great for 65. Just, I love his belly.
Are you still close to your family?
Yeah, yeah, super close.
And what was your dad like? What's Jamaican paternal relationships like? Like, are they? I'm just trying to, because I don't think I know anyone that has a Jamaican dad. Are they like affectionate? Are they standoffish? Are they, or was like, did he buck a trend, do you think?
So he was born in England. He's Jamaican, but well, like ethnic, but he's born in England. So in terms of his upbringing was different. I've heard some great stories there, but my upbringing from him was just pretty standard, really pretty normal.
How did his differ from yours, do you think?
Oh, he had, his parents were quite young when they had him. So he was looked after by his grandparents.
Okay.
And they were full Jamaican. So like, I can't do the accent, but he always does the accent. And
I can hear it. I can hear it in my head. Yeah, yeah.
You can hear it in
proper,
your head.
Proper like Rasta, like, Where if you or I walked into the room, we wouldn't have a fucking clue what was being talked about. But like,
And then, I think, well, they were in London at the time, and there was obviously a big race thing back in the day. So he wasn't allowed to like play out too long because he'd get too dark and stuff in the sun. And there was a big, they were trying to fit in, basically, really trying to fit in.
Oh, so when you were saying that, I thought you meant like at nighttime, he had to come in early, but he had to leave. So he couldn't be out if it was sunny. He couldn't stay out too long because the skin would go too dark and then he'd just be picked on more, basically.
Yep.
Fucking hell, that's crazy.
So there's some crazy stories. Again, maybe not all for this podcast, but yeah. So
that's fucking nuts. Wow, that's really floored me, that one. That's
and that's just my dad. That's what, one generation.
Was he ever like that with you? Like, was he ever like, Dan, get inside, it's 25 degrees.
No, thank God. I'm way too pale. I think if I was darker, maybe, but
he's like standing over you with a parasol while you're at rugby training, like running around after you. Yeah, geez, that's crazy.
Sun cream everywhere. No, so he had a tough time, but I've always been fine.
Do you think, was he different with you then because of that? Because he had like that kind of harshness?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he just wanted to, both my parents just want to be as nice as they can, so, and as loving as they can, and just give us all the opportunities that we could ever get. So they bent over backwards when me and my younger brother were kids doing rugby and different, you know, sports.
Was your brother as good as you at rugby or no?
I don't think he enjoyed it as much as I did.
He's not going to listen to it, Dan. Just say he's shit. He's not going to be listening.
He'll probably listen to it. I mean, in terms of like, he never played professional, so that's kind of answers that question. But he was more into karate at the time. So he was really good at karate.
So he probably that's why you don't want to say he's shit. Because, I get it. He'll just
I've got to be careful what I say here.
Yeah. You'll have another mystery injury now on your Instagram next week. It'll be like a perfect like side of a hand on the side of your face. Yeah. Okay, so then was it the case then that you sort of bumped into CrossFit and were like, fuck, there's that competitive, like I'm not gonna get hurt it's not impact. You're not gonna get hurt in the same way you would rugby. Not as many variables, I guess, in that sort of sense. But it's also got, it cures your competitive drive, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. The fact that you know where, like, the weight is coming from. If you drop a weight on your head, even if you're not expecting it, you know where the weight's coming from. It's relatively most things are kind of controlled. Rugby, someone could just, you don't even know they're behind you and your knee could just be taken out or this and that. And so I feel like having that control over what happened to me felt better. And then, yeah, basically, I'll be honest, I watched the documentary, the 2015 one, Fittest on Earth.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I think I Googled like the top five athletes height and weight and stuff. And I was like, I'm as tall as them. I weigh that much. I'm going to do that because I'll be as good as them. And then obviously found out really quickly that it doesn't work like that. But that's what got me hooked.
Did you vocalize that to anyone else? Did you say like, hey, I saw Rich Froning and I'm the same height and weight as him. Therefore, give me 6 months.
Mate, 100%. I've definitely vocalized that. And I regret it. But hey, you've like, I feel like I can't be the only person that's done that.
Oh, absolutely not. So many people look at, even now, people look across it. There's three camps. There's the educated camp who think like, wow, that's incredible that they can do that shit. I'd never be able to do that. Then there's the delusional camp who think like, I could do that. No problem. Give me like 6 months and I'll put Adler in a box. And then there's the other camp who are like, oh, I'd be too afraid to go into a CrossFit gym. Like it looks dangerous. It looks terrible. So there's those three. And I think all the professional athletes in 5 years' time, they'll all fall into that first camp or that second camp of, I could do that, no problem. I'll put Adler in a box. And I think you are one of them. I think anyone that's like Medeiros, all those guys definitely think that at some point. Like, oh, I can do that, no problem.
But I think that's what kept me going because I got humbled so quickly and I was like, shoot. Because yeah, again, I was a rugby player. I was good at what I did. I was strong. I was always one of the strongest and fittest guys at the club, and that's kind of what was in here.
Yeah,
I just didn't understand what it takes to transfer skills and be good at different disciplines and learn new things. I just didn't register in my head. But now I've got a clear understanding on how the world works. I can't just drop 20 kg and be a triathlete or an Ironman either. It just doesn't work. It's just I get it.
Yeah. Was there damage done then with those injuries and stuff, or even just like the positions that you hold in rugby, as in like the body forms and stuff and the kind of the type of strength training that you do versus like, I guess like rugby training back then was probably a lot of strength and maybe not as much conditioning like in the gym, but more so on the pitch or whatever, on the field or whatever. Whereas like now when you start training CrossFit, I'm guessing it was a bit of a rude awakening of like, oh shit, I have to squat like deep and I have to like Olympic movements probably felt unusual, like gymnastics probably felt unusual. Were you like, was there a long learning period there of not even just learning the skills but like teaching your body to move in a different way than it had become accustomed to that was kind of learned to protect itself?
Yeah, I think I'm still learning that now, and certain things I still struggle with, like there's no real hinging in rugby and there's no carrying any weight in front of you. So those things I really still struggle with, and obviously mobility I struggle with. I think that's just, I'm a stiff person, plus playing rugby, not squatting to depth and stuff doesn't help. So that took me a lot of getting used to, but I kind of, the gymnastics came to me faster than anything else, actually. I'm not too sure why.
Yeah. What are you struggling with now then? Is it like ankles, wrists? Like what's the mobility issues?
How long do we have on the podcast? So...
Hang on, I'll bring up your spreadsheet.
I've got limiting issues with my shoulder mobility wise that I'm really.
I saw you doing, was it a strict press or a push press or something about maybe 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago or something? And I remember thinking like, that's an unusual rack, like an unusual position that he's in there at the start. And then I immediately thought like, I bet that's rugby.
Yeah, I'm just using it as an excuse, but it definitely limits me. So I'd say front rack mobility is always going to be hard for me. And then just all my joints hurt. I don't know. Like I remember
that's age. Rugby, that's just age, man.
But it is, because I remember playing rugby and I used to be bulletproof. And the guys that were, you know, maybe nearly 30 were saying in winter, oh, my knees hurt. And I was thinking, you absolute, like, well, I'm not going to say the words, but I just thought, what are you on about? My knees are fine. And then now I sort of sympathize.
Yeah. It's I'm actually, maybe it's because I don't train enough, but I'm not at that. Like I can just like get out of bed and be fine and like walk down the stairs fine. And I remember someone asked me recently, they were like, when was the last time you had back pain? And I was like, never. Like I've never had back pain. But it's not through effort or like application or dedication to training or anything. If anything, the opposite. I'd say I've just skirted past it because I never reach that point of intensity where it's like my body's gonna like fall apart. I just kind of go, no, I'll just come back down. I'll just like stay down here for a while.
Yeah, but there's longevity in that, and you know, I'm definitely not. I'm living proof that pushing your body to the extreme isn't necessarily the best thing to do. There's definitely a continuum, isn't there?
Can you remember your path then that you took? So I'm assuming you joined an affiliate, like started training, started doing bits or whatever, and then was there you had that idea, I guess, of, you know, however delusional it was at the time, it's obviously proven itself not to be now, but at the time you were like, oh, I want to do that, I want to be at that level. Did you put plans in place at that time to be like, all right, I need to get a coach, I need to get this, I need to do that? Or was that like more of a long term, like kind of taking off the last few 1% kind of thing?
I think it took time. I think I remember having this one conversation with someone, and the conversation basically went like this. Me saying to them, I'm as fit as you, I'm as strong as you, why am I not good at CrossFit? And then the words they said to me was, well, how often do you do CrossFit? And I was like, I come in on a Saturday with you and we throw down on a Saturday together. And maybe I'll come in on a Monday. Like, come on, I do loads. And that conversation, when I reflect on it, made me realize that I can't complain at not being good at something if I haven't really given it my all. Yeah. So mentally, that's what that got me to try and train more. In terms of getting a coach and whatnot, I was a bit stubborn for a few years and it took me a while, I think.
Eric is after becoming a member, so you can actually
Eric, congratulations.
He's got guns, look at that. That's a big piece you've got there, Eric. Very tight glutes as well, look at that.
He's got a great legs if you're firing a gun like that.
Am I cool now? He says, yeah, you are cool, Eric. If you have a gun like that, I'm going to tell you you're cool anyway, to be honest, if you're pointing that around. Emma McQuaid, here's two very, very good lads. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you very much.
We'll come back to Emma. I want to talk to you about her in a minute. So you found a coach then. What spurred you to get a coach? Like, or what, if it took you a long time to realize that's what you wanted, what kind of push you over the edge?
It was Zach George, who was my first coach actually, and he just helped me out at the start. So that was the first step into it. And obviously I just said yes, because he was a friend of mine at the time. I'd done a bit of training with him and he helped
me out. Up that kind of general neck of the woods as well, isn't he? Up like, yeah.
Yeah, he's quite close, probably like an hour away. So that was the first thing. And then I realized with him that it helps to just not, all I was doing, mate, was cherry picking workouts off of the internet. It's picking the ones I like and just trying to smash it. So getting a program really opened my eyes to, again,
just endlessly scrolling, looking for a bench.
Mate, I love bench. And then I remember there's a workout, all these crazy names. There's one like Fat Amy. There's loads of random workouts that I found that I love that I just used to make notes.
And then, so how long were you with Zach for? Was that like more of a casual relationship then?
Yeah, that was more casual. It was during lockdown, the first lockdown, when everyone was at home and I just bought a few bits for the garage gym. So timing was nice.
Yeah. And what next then? After did something spur you to be like, were you having these moments of, oh shit, I'm seeing loads of improvement? Like, say that first guy when you're talking to him and he's like, well, I do CrossFit every day. And you started doing that. It was like, shit, like I'm after opening a lot of doors here. And then you started working with, say, Zach, and not just like cherry picking your own little bits and pieces. And then those Saturday sessions, I'm assuming, were becoming more and more like, shit, like, oh, Dan's a fucking weapon. Like, he's like, you know, applying his trade a bit here and learning his, like, cutting his teeth or whatever. Did something happen to make you think, all right, let's actually fully go for it then?
So what I think happened was, me and Saf met sort of during the lockdown as well. So my girlfriend Sapphire, and we were on different programs and we were doing different things. And we sat down one day and said, if we're going to train together, why don't we do the same thing together? And if we're going to do the same thing together and make it a thing, I'm going to say the word thing a lot, why don't we really apply ourselves and go for proper coaching, take it seriously?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why don't we just go to classes together, basically?
You were dating her
yep.
for throughout this whole, like, how, like, from rugby or from during CrossFit or from when?
No, we met during lockdown, so nearly, well, 3.5 years ago, something like that.
Okay. Now. How the fuck did you meet someone during lockdown?
We messaged a lot during the first lockdown and then,
okay,
when, you know, the breaks or whatever.
You were within your, whatever, 5 kilometers.
I was in a bubble the whole time, don't you worry.
And so she was doing it as well. So was it the case that then you were both just kind of, I guess, making each other a bit better and make, you know, like focusing a bit more or whatever, and then just decided to take the jump, I guess?
Yeah, pretty much. We just thought, why not give it a try, get a proper coach? So that's when we started with the Red Pill. And yeah, it was really good. We finally both realized that if we want to take it seriously, this is what we need to do. We need to train properly.
And who did you go to?
We were with Red Pill, and our coach was a guy called Phil Mansfield. We actually moved to Denmark as well to train there, which was really fun.
Yeah, they do loads of like camps still, like over in Denmark. What's the Denmark like?
It was a really good experience. It was, oh, middle of nowhere. So moving there for 6 months was pretty rough because there wasn't much to do. But in terms of the intensity of the workouts and the training camp was up there for sure. Some of the hardest stuff I've ever done.
How long were you at Red Pill for?
I was with Red Pill for, I can't remember, a couple of years, give or take. I've only started recently with Mayhem.
Up until that point, you were at Red Pill?
Yeah, I swapped coaches in Red Pill, but I was with Red Pill for that whole period.
Okay. And have you done, you've probably only done like what, 2 or 3 weeks of Mayhem, have you?
A little bit more, but not an awful lot.
And how does it compare to what you were doing at Red Pill?
Oh, I love it. It's really good. It feels like there's certain bits that I've been, you always feel like you've been missing stuff when you swap programs, I think, but basically I like the format more. I'm doing a few more WODs than I'm used to, but I think that maybe at this kind of time in my little CrossFit career, I need to be focusing more on WODs. So I'm competing more now, is what I'm trying to say. Lockdown and everything was different, but now I actually need to be comp ready. Instead of just, let's say, building a base or working on volume on certain things, there's a time and a place for that. Maybe a few years ago, I was learning more, I was building more volume, but now is the time for me to make a change and start to challenge myself more in the performance side of it as well.
Yeah. So I asked, how does it compare? How does Mayhem compare to Red Pill? And you answered, I love it. Which makes me wonder, what did you think of Red Pill at the end of Red Pill?
So I was working with a guy called Theo, and I love Theo. Theo's brilliant. He's a really good coach, but when you get offered something like Mayhem, it's a no-brainer. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Do you think that you said there that the volume and stuff is that you needed that and that you needed to kind of build that up? I guess everyone does. Like, I remember Emma saying something similar when she started working with, like, Jousy, that it was like, okay, you're fit, but you're not like CrossFit fit. Like, you need to get, it's a different kind of fitness. And she couldn't understand why she was doing so much like zone 2 and shit on the bike. She was like, I don't get this. But I mean, it's obviously paid off. So now, like, do you think that had you, say, not been with them and just gone straight to Mayhem, do you think you would have had to go through that? Now that, you know what I mean, do you think that's part, is that part of the journey that everyone has to go through? And do you think that it was stand to you in time? Do you think that maybe you did it for too long? Do you think that it was like, are you happy with your, I guess, the experiences that you've cultivated up until this point in the, like, in training?
I know what you're trying to say. So I think I'd done it for the right amount of time. I think basically what happened was me and Saf moved to Denmark to try and do a team for the 2022 game season. So last year.
Yeah.
We had an injury. Our other teammate ruptured her ACL. So that threw a big spanner in the works of that team that year, and the team didn't go ahead.
Yeah.
So I think I could have been ready to go into more mayhem style stuff that season if my mental state was there, but because the team went fell through and me and Saf were a bit deflated on our season, we didn't do that. We stayed with Red Pill for another year. And then finally, we realized that we really want to start to push ourselves in the individual as well. We're going individual this year. So
okay,
it seemed like a perfect transition into that.
How heartbreaking is this, right? So Emma McQuaid says, here's two very, very good lads and a love heart. And then we scroll down a little bit. And it was actually just Mikey Aldridge signed into Emma McQuaid's account. I was like, God, I don't know if I've ever gotten a compliment, public or otherwise, from Emma. And then it turns out it wasn't even her that did it. I'll take it from Mikey.
Comment and just pretend it was Emma.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have to pull it up on screen, I guess. That would have been an easy way to hide it.
I would have never even known. But Mikey, thank you.
So mayhem then, and you're going individual. Now, you said something there that interested me. So you were on a team in 2022 and someone ruptured their ACL. You were on a team in 2023 and Saf was on the team as well. And what happened?
She ruptured her ACL.
Like, what are the fucking chances of that?
I think it's me.
they're catching the rugby injury itis.
Yeah, maybe.
Was the 2022 athlete a Red Pill athlete as well?
Yeah, she was a lady called Frida Muller. She's from Denmark, and she is a savage. I think she's now trying to do triathlons and stuff. So she was super fit.
Yeah,
it's just
I don't know enough about programming. Does that say anything about programming that two athletes rupture their ACLs in CrossFit? Is that a common injury in CrossFit?
It's not a common. I think it's more common now. I'd say it's one of the most common big injuries in CrossFit.
Yeah.
Seems to be knees and elbows, doesn't it? But I wouldn't say it's a common thing. And yeah, to have two in the space of nearly a year, I don't know.
Cave asks, what ethnicity is Dan? He joined late. And Allegra summarizes it perfectly by saying, Cave, he's a mutt. He said he went over his Chinese Jamaican, amongst others. Yeah, Allegra's good.
Literally everything you can think of, just mixed up with the ball.
Okay, so you now she was with you, so Saf was with you when you both decided to give it a proper go and give it a proper lash, and then you have the heartbreak. Well, she wasn't on that team in 2022 as well, was she?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, we're both in the same team.
Sake. So she was on that team, and then that gets taken away from you all. So you have to deal with that, stomach it, and, you know, and you've sacrificed a lot, you've moved to do that. You've, situated yourself in a different country to do that. Just when, normality was kind of returning as well, where life was kind of going back to normal after all lockdowns and all that shit, after that, you go, right, let's move to Denmark. So you're sacrificing that initial kind of return to normality phase with family, friends, and all that kind of stuff to move to a different country where you only know the people that you're training with, basically. Then that gets taken away from you, and you no longer have that opportunity that you sacrificed everything for. How do you pick yourself up to go again then? How do you, because I'm just curious that if, because I've heard of this happening a couple of times to different athletes where they go team, someone pops or someone gets injured, and then they come back the next year, someone pops or someone gets injured, and it's like, man, how can you not just go individual? How can you not just be like, right, I'm just gonna fuck this, rely on other people, let's just rely on ourselves? How did you pick yourselves back up? Or was there a mourning period after that, 2022 season?
Yeah, huge mourning period. It took us months to sort of feel like ourselves, and we had no goal. And we thought, like you mentioned, it's like, what do we do? Do we just go individual? But a big driver for me and Saf has always been to do it together. We wanted to, and we still do want to get to the games together. Up until they've changed it this year, registration's always on Saf's birthday for the games. Yeah. So she's always been super excited to register on her birthday because it'd be a great feeling. So last year we said that we're going to do it again, but we made sure that it would be on our terms in terms of location. So only if we could find people that would come to us or be in a close proximity would we do a team again. And luckily we found that.
And that was in Rotherham.
30-minute drive from us, yeah. We just needed a boy. Georgia Davenport trains at Rotherham, and then we needed a boy, and we found a crazy guy called Moritz who decided to drive up from Wales and train with us, and I'm super grateful.
He's a build for athlete, isn't he?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's cool. Was he? Did he do strength and depth at the weekend? Yeah, yeah.
He did.
I was like 99% sure it was him, but I wasn't confident enough to go over to him. He was on his own every time I saw him. But I was like, oh, I'm just not confident enough that it's him. And I wasn't having an awkward interaction where I went over and introduced myself to someone who like was like, why are you talking to me? he seems like a cool guy. So then you go through that season of training and getting to know that team and whatever else. And then selfishly, Saf decides to do her ACL as well. That's awful though. So like, it's awful on multiple levels because I guess you finally felt like, all right, this time, like, because it was after quarterfinals. It was pretty much nearly at semifinals, right?
It was pretty close to semis, yeah. And we'd qualified. It's only quarters, but we were like third in Europe. We were feeling pretty positive. Three out of the four teammates had qualified individual for semis as well. And we all decided to go team because we thought this is a real big shot for us.
So what happened? How did she hurt it?
She was rebounding hang power cleans. So you've seen it before where they catch it in the front rack and you almost like drop it onto your legs with quite a lot of force and bounce it up into the catch.
Okay.
She was doing that and her foot was slightly internally rotated. So as she's dropped the weight onto her knee or her leg.
Like caved inwards.
Yeah, it popped out basically.
Fuck. Was it instant like was she... Because I've never done that, so I don't know what that feels like. Is that like crippling pain, can't move? Or have you got that adrenaline where you kind of feel like, oh, is it okay for a while? And then, you know, like what was the response?
The first thing you see is like, from the outside, is that it looks like she's been like tasered or something. Like she's had a real big jolt. So the bar dropped, grabs her leg, hobbles over to the side and goes, that felt really weird. I think I did.
But not like intense pain, just like something is wrong, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Not intense pain, not enough to stop her from talking.
Yeah.
But basically, she really struggled. And then afterwards, she said she thinks it's okay, but she felt like there was some air compression in her knee.
Yeah.
And that's when I sort of realized that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound normal.
So it's like, it's like it needed to be cracked or something. Like it just felt like you know, like your knuckles need to be cracked, like that sort of feeling. But then, yeah, okay, that's rough.
That's what she thought it was, but it wasn't that.
And then, so are you waiting confirmation then? You're fearing the worst, I guess, hoping for the best. And then you just go for an MRI basically and see what's said.
If she was an individual, and let's say she had a good chance to maybe qualify as an individual that year, risk versus reward, she probably wouldn't have had a scan. She would have just gone, because it's only on her, and she would have probably competed as an individual. But because we had the whole team, what we didn't want to do is get to semis, her have to pull out after the fifth workout when we're so close to qualifying and then everything's ruined for everyone. Or like, another worst case scenario is maybe qualify for the games and realize that her knee is not good and she can't do the games. So we made a decision to get it scanned for the team more than anything else. And yeah, kind of, it was lucky that we did.
Yeah, I mean, if her ACL is flapping around like a fucking windsock in the back of her knee and you're like, yeah, maybe we'll get scanned, will we? It's like, yeah. Mate, it's
trying to convince her was hard though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd have to ask her, but I'm assuming that there's, it kind of falls into that thing of maybe your dad is the same as my dad, where you advise to go to the doctor and it's like, I know, they'll just find something wrong with me. It's like people always laugh at that until it's them. And then they're like, I get it. And I feel like maybe she was the stubbornness of like, well, if I go and they tell me it's ruptured, I'm out. But if I don't go and it gets better somehow magically, because the MRI machine is the thing that'll break it. If I don't go and I feel okay, we can keep going.
Yeah, she loved the fact. I mean, as you do, you're scared of admitting if there's anything wrong, I guess.
Yeah.
So we had two physios' opinions. One said it wasn't ruptured before the scan, and one said it was. And you can guess which one was her favorite, because
we need to stick with this guy. Yeah. He's there with the MRI scan, just drawing a line to be like, no, it's fine, it's fine.
Yeah. Smiley face in the middle. Yeah, it's pretty normal.
Yeah, yeah. You see this gap? That's your ACL, but it's not there. Ah, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
So, okay, how far out are we from semi-finals now? Like, what are we, like, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Probably less than that. Less, about a month, less, something like that.
Okay.
It was close.
And would she, do you think, like, because I saw her at semi-finals on, like, crutches and shit. So, yeah, like, did she have surgery?
She had surgery. So, when was semi-finals? What dates? That,
May. May 20th, June, something, May.
So, let's say early June. She had her operation beginning of May. So, maybe she was three, 4 weeks max. Okay. Post-op.
And that operation was, this will give you longevity in your sport operation. Like, she probably would have been fine without it, but this is the, you know, the clincher kind of. Okay.
Pretty much.
And then, who replaced her then?
A girl from our box called Alex, who is a good friend of ours, and she signed up as a backup to just make sure we had a backup, basically. And she said, of course, if you need me, I'm there. But she never expected to be needed.
What was her response? Because obviously, you don't want that kind of, what do you call it? Oh, man, if I can pull this word out. Schadenfreude or something, isn't it? You know, where you like joy in other people's misfortune. So she doesn't want to have that. Schadenfreude, something like that. She doesn't want to have that over Saf. Like, she obviously feels terrible for her. But then, did she regret like signing up as the alternate? Was she a bit like, oh, fuck off, I'm not doing this?
Mate, she was real nervous at the start to accept it. She knew she had to, but she didn't want to at the start, I don't think. But she did a great job, and the good news was we all convinced her, including Saf. Saf had to be on board as well, which was hard for Saf, but she had to tell Alex that we all want you to do it because we all...
But if she doesn't, nobody can. So
it makes perfect sense. So Alex stepped up semis. She did an amazing job, and we managed to still get a spot. Like, I'm so grateful, because without her, none of us would have had a season.
What was it like though? So Saf's in Berlin with you, and then I met her in Madison, and she was there as well with you when you're competing at the games and stuff. Like she loves you, obviously.
Mm.
But it must, like, was there awkward? Was there, like, tension? Was there, like, an extreme level of FOMO? Was it, like, did she almost, like, did you ever feel like she didn't want you to be doing it? Did you ever feel like that it was, that you were hurting her by doing it? Or that, like, did you ever have even irrational guilt over it?
So I think she would always want me to do it. She's super caring. I mean, she'd have probably got injured on purpose if it meant I got to go. But I did see how much it hurt her, and I think everyone did a little bit, and it was tough, but
yeah,
that's part of sport. We live by the sword, die by the sword. We signed up for this, so
yeah. Did you ever try and hide, like, you know, because I'm assuming after you qualify in Berlin,
hide from
there
her.
Must be there must be like a 4 day period where you're just on cloud nine, where it's just like, this is fucking unbelievable, I'm going to the games. But were you like, this is all right, I suppose? I mean, I guess it's okay. Like, did you try and like dampen it down a bit and be like, this is it's kind of shit, I don't really want to go actually. or did you feel the opposite and be like, well, I have to enjoy this like five times as much to make her sacrifice worth it and to make it like her misery worth the fact that it's happening?
I think it was definitely the first one. It was like, just trying to, but to be fair for us, you know, I don't know how other couples do it in the elite sport world. Is we find it slightly challenging maintaining a good relationship. Not that we've never struggled with the relationship, but we struggle with balancing the two. So we always said that me and Saf come first no matter what. So in terms of the celebration, in terms of everything, we had to make sure that we were good before that had to come before CrossFit, if that makes any sense.
So if she's like, you know, cuddling you on the couch, like crying because she's not going, you have to be like, oh, it's okay. And then like, as soon as she looks up, you're like, oh, I know, it's terrible. Like, you know, as she looks away, you're just beaming again. She's like, I can see the reflection of your teeth on the wall.
Do you know what? It was a real like challenging but interesting time. And I'm glad we went through it, because in terms of relationship, it made us stronger. And I also think for both of us, to sort of see the whole holistic world of sport, CrossFit, everything was really good, really good.
But even like, it's either going to make you stronger or it's going to break it, because like, say if that was Moritz, who injured his ACL, he can just not go to the gym. Like, he can just, like, avoid, he can just head back to Wales and be like, all right, best of luck at everything. Like, sorry, it didn't work out, whatever. Whereas, like, she, it's unavoidable for her. Like, she's surrounded by it constantly, and the intensity just increases as, like, July gets closer and closer. And then she also has the misery of, like, going, and I'm sure she found enjoyment in it, like, while it was happening too. But, like, the frustration of going on a plane to Madison but not getting to do it, the frustration of being at North Park but not getting to do it, and like seeing you guys do it, and like trying to be like, it must have been fucking exhausting trying to be like, hey, good job guys, while inside being like, fuck this, you know, and like trying to suppress that kind of rage. Like,
I feel so sorry for her, really, really do. But I did say, and I stand by this, that it brings me back to my rugby days, where like, if you're injured before a cup final, you're still part of the team.
Yeah,
and you've got to go. It's your duty. And she's never had a major injury before. So I just kind of jokingly said, you know, like, welcome to the real athlete world. Like, this is unfortunately sometimes what happens. And it's, if you want to stick around in a sport, this is what you've got to do. You've got to tough it out. And she did so well. I know it hurt her, but she did such a good job to kind of realize that sometimes it's not all sunshine and rainbows and injuries happen. Yeah. You either become a big, like you said, it even makes you or break you, doesn't it?
Yeah. But she's back now. She's back full 100%, like full pedal to the floor, yeah.
Oh, she's flying now. I think I did the Dubai CrossFit Champs as well. And after that, we've kind of put a line through the year, metaphorically. Okay. So she's more motivated than anyone I've ever seen in my life, because she can now turn the page and think about next season.
And how are you feeling? As in, she's had this kind of off period, and like, her fire is like burning crazy hot because like she missed out and she lost out or whatever. So now she wants it more than ever. Are you like the same? Are you tired? Are you like, fucking hell, can I go for another season? Like, how are you feeling about it?
I'm tired. But I know that I'm only tired because it's been a stressful year, tiring year. I know that. My birthday is just after Christmas, by the way, so don't forget that. But after the whole Christmas period, I'll get motivated. I know that this next month is just a bit of a slow time, and I'm ready for that, because we do it together, we train together, and if she's that motivated next year, then I'll just have to bring it.
When is your birthday?
29th.
Oh.
The worst possible day.
I'll do you one better. Mine is on the 21st. Mine's on Thursday, so it's close to Christmas that I used to always get like, now this is for your birthday and Christmas. That was my that was always my gift receiving thing. Now I also get, my daughter was born also on the 21st on my birthday. So now I got like the best birthday present ever. So every other birthday present from now on is shit. And I no longer have a birthday, because it's just like, it just doesn't exist anymore. Like, she's three. So it's like, oh, you know, it's dad's birthday too. And then like, she'll just be like, for my birthday, I want, it's like, yeah, but you know, it's your dad's birthday as well. It's like, and for my birthday. So yeah, that's my current situation. So yeah, it could be worse than the 29th, but
You know the feeling though. I remember one birthday, or like Christmas, I got a bike, and my birthday I got a bike helmet or something like that. Like, I kind of got, you know what I mean?
So they not all, that's actually worse, because they left you with a bicycle for a month. Now here's your helmet, protect your head. It's like, we didn't care enough to give it to you at the time. Okay, this is actually probably worse. Steven says his is on the 24th of December. Shit show. Yeah, that is shit. I used to remember that when I was a kid, like a child, the thing that annoyed me was nobody ever, maybe this isn't why, maybe this is just what they told me. No one ever wanted to go to birthday parties because it was so close to Christmas. That, you know, it'd be like, yours is not close enough for Christmas to justify that.
Yeah, we're the same amount of days away from Christmas Day.
Sorry, 29th of December. Sorry, I thought 29th of January you were saying. I was like, it's not that close. All right, okay, sorry. Yeah, you're right beside it then. Okay, sorry, my bad. I retract everything I said. Well, this is probably worse. Cave D'Astro's birthday is the 32nd of December, so he's fucked. Okay, yeah, sorry. I thought you meant 29th of January. I was like, man, that's fucking ages away. That's not even that close. I was like, they left you for a month without a helmet. That's ridiculous. Okay, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I used to always be told, I remember like 21st, are 21st the big thing in the UK? Are they a big like birthday? Like you have a big part like in a pub or whatever. And oh man, hardship, like fucking five people and like snow, like couldn't get anywhere. Oh man, fucking shit show. I wanted to ask you about your Instagram.
Go for it.
How many of these followers have you bought and how many are real? How the fuck do you have so many followers? You said you started this to motivate yourself to get back to rugby, and now you've nearly a million followers.
Yeah, and because when I left professional rugby, I had nothing else going on in my life. So I needed to do personal training to make an income. And I saw that all the PTs were doing bodybuilding shows, and that's kind of how they were selling themselves, like with looks, with physique and stuff. I never wanted to do a show, but that made me understand that I need to post more fitnessy stuff on social media, topless stuff, whatever it was, to get me clients. So that's kind of
This from Chase is accurate. Her strap tie is accurate.
Mate, so
inarguable.
I just do me nowadays, but I just gained a lot of followers, mainly from traveling. Actually, my dad used to work in Sri Lanka, so that kind of helped.
Was that army based as well?
No, that was after the army. He was just managing some nice villas there, so we used to go on nice holidays. So nice. That probably helped.
I mean, it obviously works for the algorithm. Obviously shows. Are these filtered at all?
Yeah, you put like, do you use Lightroom? Have you heard of Lightroom?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Will that give me abs?
Oh, the abs aren't like edited, but it's on
it. Yeah. Jeez, you're in fucking insane shape, man. It's crazy.
Cheers, mate. But I just want to make sure I'm not display model only. I want to make sure that I can like have a little bit of all show and a tiny bit of go as well. That would be nice.
Well, there's after. Do you have two pages? Do you have like a personal page and then this page, or is this your page?
I just use this for everything. It's just my work. Do you know what I mean? That's all it is nowadays.
Is it like, do you, so just, this isn't a criticism. I'm just curious. So if I start at the top, right?
Go for it.
And if I scroll, so one, two. Three, four. There's a lot of pictures of you topless, and there's four pictures of your other half. Is that a deliberate, like, all right, the body sells, the body gets the clicks, and it's good for business, it's good for me, good for sponsors, good for business, good for, you know, the brand or whatever. And then is like, I'm assuming when you put these kind of pictures up that they get less engagement from your vehement side of your fan base.
I think I go through phases, really. I go through phases where I post quite a bit of stuff, but at the same time, like my Instagram's me, her Instagram, her, whatever. And I do online coaching as well. So I just try and think about what's going to be best for me long term on this. In terms of our relationship, like this is just social media. This is not my life. This is a page of pixels that people are looking at right now. It has no relevance to what we actually do in life.
Yeah, like that's the thing. I've seen you two together, and I know what you well, at least what you look like, you know, in public together. Like you could fucking hate each other for all I know, but from what I've seen you in public, there's a definite like affection for each other there. I'm not saying that. I just mean like I feel like you might fall into the category of athletes who Instagram is an arm of your business, basically. It's like a branch of it's business, it's a storefront, it's like a
100%.
Like she's not good for storefrontage, like as in not a criticism of her, not a criticism of like anything, but just if you have if your market is for men
to get in shape and lose weight and gain muscle.
Men who either want to look like you or who want to touch you while you look like you, then if you have her on your page, it might be off-putting for some of those people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not too bothered if it's off-putting for them, but I just think it's not necessarily what will get me the work.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. I don't think that, oh, people won't like that. I'm not bothered about that, but I'm just thinking about what will help me build a future. And we build a future together outside of Instagram.
Have you ever been tempted to do like, what the fuck is the name of that thing where
Rambler said happy birthday. Thank you. It's next week, I think.
You spelled your last name wrong. That's such a racist spelling of your last name.
I'm used to it.
What's the name of the thing? Not Canva. What's the name of the thing where you record a message for someone and say, happy birthday, it's fucking Dan Tai here and I'm Cameo. In Rotherham. Cameo. Have you ever been tempted to do that or like OnlyFans or any of that kind of stuff?
I've got lots of friends that do Cameo. There's options, but at the moment I'm really focusing on my online coaching because I took a few years off just because of sponsors on Instagram and whatnot, but now that's my favorite thing to do just because I love coaching people. I've got my own app. We've just invested into, we're co-owners of a gym now, our local gym. So we're really trying to go along the coaching side, both of us. And try
What's the gym name?
It's called The Box. I think it's in my bio, actually. It's called The Box Barnsley.
Oh. And what's the app? Is one of these the app?
You can find the app, but you've got to like sign
Fitbud,
up.
Fitbud, that yeah, thing, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, hang on. I can get both of these up.
Go for it.
There's The Box.
It's the gym. We've got a new Christmas timetable.
That's cool. Now,
it's where we train. So it's our local box.
And that's this post, Daniel, this would do a lot better if it was just you topless. You know that. you need to impose your marketing.
But no, I think that's a completely different market. Again, that's,
yeah.
We want to aim for completely different demographics to what's on my Instagram. That's just, and I love the community at that box is great.
And then this is your website to your app, I guess.
Yeah. And there's a few transformations and I do like either a generic style plan or I do VIP coaching.
Wow. She's had a crazy transformation.
She did amazing. She did really good.
This guy got new boxers. I'm joking. He had a good transformation too. I just thought it was funny. It's like, you know, that thing like, here's Kevin. And it's like, he's just not wearing glasses anymore. It's like, he's had a huge transformation.
I thought you meant like he was a different person because I've also seen them. They're quite funny too.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's like a black guy and a white guy. It's like he's been dedicated for 6 months. That's good. What is it? Thai Train. Okay.
Thai Train is the name, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's my real passion at the moment. Trying to build that alongside a gym would be really, really cool.
Okay. So 2024 then, you're going to... you're going individual. That's the plan. Did Dubai cement that for you? Be like, fuck yeah, I'm ready for this. Or did it? Was there any party that was like, oh shit, that was like different than I expected it to be?
I knew we wanted to, me and Saf both decided individual before Dubai, but that solidified for both of us that it's where we want to be. We just want to just put it on us and it's only on you. And it's as hard as we individually work. And regardless of what happens in the season, we've decided that, you know, if I make semis, if she makes semis, whatever, we're going to support each other the whole way.
Yeah.
And as long as we have some clarity on that, hopefully not much can go wrong this time. Because last time we said that we'll do the team and support each other the whole way, but injury really threw a spanner in the works in that one.
I guess it's kind of different as well, though, because if she qualifies and you don't, or you qualify and she doesn't, it's different than both of you being on the same team and one of you having to drop out because, like, it's just you just weren't there yet, as opposed to, well, we qualified, but I couldn't go and now I have to sit and watch. It's like if she goes and you don't, it's like, well, I just have more work to do. Like, you'd be pissed off or upset or whatever, but like, it's probably easier to switch into the support role in that scenario than having qualified, but then not being able to go or have been ripped off you again. Interesting, right. So your decision to go individual, was there any part of you then when the announcements came out about that it'll be a smaller semi-final field, was that a bit of a punch in the dick when you heard that, or were you just like, I don't really care?
Not gonna lie, a little bit of poop came out, but I'm joking. No, do you know what? I like it because you either make it or you don't. And
yeah,
I just hope I make it. I'm just excited to send it, and I want to be as high up the leaderboard as I can. So should be good. Yeah.
I meant to ask, so what's the link with Emma? How did you end up? Because you've been in Emma's gym a good few times over the last, like, say, 18 months or 12 or 18 months. Yeah. Is that because she used to be Red Pill way back? Is that a link through there? Did you meet her somewhere? How did that kind of relationship start up?
We did strength and depth together, a team comp October last year or something.
Okay.
And then we also did a black box fitness event, which was really good fun. It was like a little five people doing.
Oh, that was like at nighttime, and it was like orange lights. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it was class. So met her through there. We just got on really well. She's good friends with Saf too. And she's just the nicest person ever. She's just so helpful, and she's just supported us massively as someone that has done so much that we'd love to do. Just being able to talk to someone like that and get her opinions on everything has been amazing.
Yeah. She's kind of been there and done it, I guess, whether it's like injury or, you know, getting to that level or whatever. Yeah.
I think that she wanted to help me with my mobility as well on my shoulder. So I think she had an invested interest in that because she knows how good Linda, her physio, is. And like,
yeah,
she saw how I couldn't move and was like, we can fix that.
Yeah. Well, that's like Jousey's whole thing. Like, Jousey is her coach, yeah, and that's his whole thing of like, you move well first and then everything else comes. So yeah, she probably saw it as a bit of a challenge. It wouldn't be like her to see something as a challenge and try to rise to it. Okay, so what about anything between now and the Open, like Wadapalooza, anything else planned? Or
did Wadapalooza just on a team for fun last year, and it was great. This year I can't afford to go there, so just gonna get head down, really. New coaching, new programming. It's just time to get to work, really.
Yeah. Is your an online coach, and you go to that gym? Are you going to coach at that gym now as well? Then the box.
I might do a few classes at some point, but I'd rather look at the managing side and try and, you know,
okay,
make sure the standards are good, make sure we're getting new members, all that sort of stuff. I'm only a co-owner, so it's not fully my box.
But yeah.
One day I'd love to have my own place, and this is a perfect start for that.
Yeah.
And then dipping in and out of coaching.
And so is your primary source of income then online coaching or like sponsors, or like what's the bulk of your income from?
I'd say at the moment online coaching is the biggest bit. It's been brilliant. So it's scalable, which is nice. Social media helps for that, which is nice. I actually want to post more on every single social platform that I can. I'm looking for a video editor actually who can start to help me with editing stuff, because I just think that if I can scale that, it will set me up for the future. And you know, when we want to settle down, have kids, it will give them a better life too.
Yeah. Mikey suddenly got very quiet there in the chat. There's an opportunity for you, Mikey. He'd be good. He'd be good at that. I'm not sure Emma would be too chuffed if he.
No. I'm not treading on Emma's shoes. No way.
Yeah.
Or feet.
Cool. We need to pick someone. I actually think, funnily enough, I think Stephen might be the only on the island of Ireland viewer.
And his birthday is the 24th of December. Is that the same guy?
Yeah. He could be lying just to get the prize, but I haven't seen anybody else say Ireland, so
if it works.
Oh well, Mikey, but fuck Mikey. Yeah, look, it's Stephen's birthday. We just give it to Stephen then?
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, we just give it to Stephen. Surely I am. My nose is so blocked. My God, I sound like, I don't know what I sound like. I don't sound like myself. Okay, so Stephen, just DM me to remind me and I'll get you the D8 fitness voucher. I have a busy week, Dan. I have you today. I have Around the Whiteboard semi-final 1 is on tomorrow.
Nice. At
this, an hour in 23 hours. So 8 p.m. our time tomorrow. Or noon PST, 3 p.m. GMT. So that's Andrew Hiller, Chase Ingram, and Lucy Campbell. They're going head-to-head there. I've got all my contestants lined up for the next, like, three episodes, and there's some fucking whoppers in there. Then that's Wednesday. Thursday, I've got Don Fall is coming on, so we're going to talk about CrossFit, I guess, the company. That's at 8 GMT. No, 9 GMT or 1 p.m. PST or 5 p.m. It's 4 p.m. EST, Eastern Standard Time. Sorry, Australians, but I just can't be fucking arsed. Then Friday, a review of the year with Chase Ingram, Bill Grundler, and Brian Spinn. And we're going to give out awards for, like, best male athlete, best female athlete, best performance, best competition, best podcast, best episode, best vlog, best whatever. We have a list. We're going to be that on Friday. I know you don't really give a shit about that, but I needed to say it at some point, and now I've said it, so it's done.
Job I feel like you have to say it to me, but say it to everyone else.
Oh yeah, so. I mean, I was talking to you, but like none of it was relevant to you. We all know the facade that I'm putting up here. It's just a charade. Like that's yeah. But listen, thanks very much for coming on. It's been great to get to talk to you. Good luck with your individual bout, and all the best to Saf and everything else. And say hello to Facundo. And yeah, good luck. It's great. Hopefully you'll, you know, get to strut your stuff in Lyon, and I could have said that really French with my black nose. Lyon. And yeah, you get to show your worth there. It'd be great. Congrats with the investment in the gym and your online coaching, and continued success. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun, and good luck with the rest of the week for your busy podcast schedule.
Yeah, thanks. Tomorrow, 8 p.m.
8 p.m.